Tan, say hello and welcome. You're listening to the voices of our people on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Tremblay. Today, I continue my conversation with Mikisew Cree First Nations own Julia McDougall. With the immersion of the language as well is that we also see nowadays that, you know, we see music integrating the language as well. As a teacher, when you see stuff like that, musical performers like Fawn Wood, for example, a Juno Award winner, when you see her integrating the language into her music, as well as many others here in Alberta, what does that mean to you to see stuff like that?
You know, I think music is ingrained in most of us, and I think it's very important. You know, it's a different way of learning, but you enjoy the music, you're listening to it, you're hearing it, and you know these musicians are, you know, they're role models as well.
And of course, I have to ask you as well is, how did you feel when you got involved to be a part of the traditional celebration of achievement, which celebrates Indigenous graduates as a chair member?
It started back in 1998. I was working in an elementary school, and my oldest son was going to graduate that year. And my dear friend, Irene Ludit, she's passed to the spirit world here in December, this past December. So she was the liaison for Father Mercury High School, and I was working for the public schools. And we'd always have a little meeting, like Aboriginal students, parents, and so forth. One day we were sitting there, and she said, geez, I wonder what we should do for our students now that they're graduating. They're going to be gone now. They leave the school. We're no longer involved in their daily lives. So we're sitting there, and then we said, you know what? Maybe we should honor them with an eagle feather because they've passed. You know, they're going to get they're going to get the grade 12s now. So we could honor them, and with an eagle feather, we'll get an elder to come in to present eagle feather to them. But we'll also invite their parents to come sit down and have a meal. Just a celebration. We just started. Just a small celebration. So we started with Father Mercury High School and Composite High School. That's the school that I'm working at now in the high school level. So anyway, so that's how it started. And we had maybe 38 grads. And at that time, we just had the two schools involved here in Fort McMurray, Father Mercury and Composite High. But over the years, this is our 26th year now. We're going to be celebrating on May the 25th. Now we have like 10 schools surrounding Wood Buffalo, Fort Chipcombs, Fort Mackay, Anzac. So we invite, so it's like sometimes we have over 100 grads. And it became really, really big, I guess, you know, more students. So we had to do we hold it at Kiana College now at a theater. There's just a lot of, and it's a beautiful, and I've been involved with it for many, many years. So it's a real honor to do that. You know, it gives me great pleasure to see our students graduate. They got their grade 12s. They got their eagle feather, and that's going to carry them in their life.
And of course, with the help of your impact to their lives as well, to walk across and grace that stage to also accept the eagle feather. But you've also done a lot of involvement with the Full Circle Mentoring Program with Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Wood Buffalo back in 2009, which is still being offered to students today. Can you talk a little bit about your involvement within the Full Circle Mentoring Program?
Well, that was back in 2009, like you said. Of course, I was still working at the high school, at Composite High, and some gentleman that was working for the Wood Buffalo, the community center anyway, they had a grant for, I don't know, you know, an X amount of money. They had a grant, and then they were trying to pull committee members, community members together, and they wanted to start a little program. So that's what we did. We sat together as a committee member. We had an elder sit with us, and then we talked. We discussed what should be, you know, offered, because in some schools they don't have like Cree class and so forth or Aboriginal studies. So we started this after school program that we got the students involved, the grades 3s and 4s, and we also at that time we had the high school students involved. So they were the mentees. So they helped with the program, and they did crafts. They did a lot of things, played games and stuff like that. And it's still happening today. And so a of course, I stepped away and other people just take over, and the program still runs to this day.
And, from being in that mentoring program, do you have any moments that you've had with interactions within that program that stood out to you that you'll always remember or be fond of?
You know, we're there as adults, coordinating this program. But what I used to find was like little kids, they love playing, they love the crafts and so forth. But what I found was when we brought the teenagers come in there, they're almost looking up to the teenagers. Like the teenagers are the role models for them. You know, that stood out a lot to me. And And now these teenagers that were involved in there, they're adults now. They have their own families.
And of course, not that long ago, back here in December or January, we also got to witness the Wood Buffalo hosting the Arctic Winter Games, which showcased a lot of indigenous games such as, stick games as well as Dene hand games and so forth, along with a lot of indigenous competitors from the Northwest Territories, from the Yukon and all over Alberta as well. Were you able to witness that? And if so, what does that mean to you to see indigenous culture being showcased on a big stage like that?
I think it was phenomenal. We had it was so good to watch the different games, but especially the hand games. I think that was a big hit. Recently here, we hosted our own Dene hand games in our schools, the high schools and the elementary schools. And the kids loved it. And it wasn't just for the Aboriginal students as well. We invited all nations to come play the hand games. And we're going up to High Prairie here soon because one of the teams won. So they're going to go up to High Prairie to do a hand game competition in High Prairie here next month.
And when you see stuff like that, like the Dene hand games becoming almost like a synonymous event that can be hosted in almost every school for just not even just Indigenous people, but also non-Indigenous people to participate as well. What does that mean to see something like that happen within school bodies?
You know, they have such fun. You know, the students, when they see that, they're learning a lot. They're just having fun with it. The Dene hand game is just a one game. And we've hosted another Indigenous game on numeracy. The counting sticks. There are so many that I was involved in hosting for games, under numeracy. And, how they learn as they play, like the stick game, they have a game called stick game. It's counting.
Mm-hmm.
When I was teaching Cree, grade three, I remember one year I taught grade three Cree class. And we used to play this one game called stick game. And it was just counting sticks and stuff. It's a really, for them, it was a cool game, they called it, the grade threes. But the English teacher one day, or the math teacher one day, came to me and said, what are you doing with your students? What are you doing with our students? Because these grade threes, I only had about 12 students at the time, would come to my class for half an hour and they'd go back to their their math class or whatever. And she would was teaching them math. I think she was teaching them about grouping, grouping whatever. They're doing some a skill on grouping. But those 12 kids that were coming to my classroom for the Cree class and playing that game, they're catching on so quickly, and she couldn't believe it. She said, what are you doing with them? And it was just by playing that one game, that Indigenous game. Like the kids were playing, but they're also learning without even knowing.
And that's the beauty of these amazing games, because I know when I participated in the Athabasca Tribal Council's Culture Fest up in Fort McMurray on Sny Hill, it was amazing to witness that, because I didn't even know what hand games were. Next thing I'm sitting there with the drum and I'm drumming or I'm participating in the games itself. And in regards to such events like that happen within Fort McMurray, are there any projects that you have coming up that you would like to integrate or get more involved in within the Wood Buffalo area?
Well, right now, like I said, the hand games are really, really big right now. So we're hoping to like have games and compete against like even the other school districts, because there's three school districts within this area. There's the Fort McMurray Public, of course, for Catholic schools, and then the Northland School Division as well. You know, so that can be a whole, like, there's so many schools around here that we can host hand games and so forth. And then, of course, we still going to the land-based learning camps as well, you know, overnight land-based camps. That's big, too.
And, of course, you had said it in an interview way back when that, you know, you were talking about your vision for Indigenous programming is not only that the school district will continue educating students and staff, but also the general public about the true history of Canada's First Nations people and, of course, their many contributions. And so with that vision, are you starting to see that vision come to light in today's times? You know, with the Truth and Reconciliation Movement, the Orange Shirt Days, and, of course, just the integration of the teachings of the cultures across the province of Alberta and Canada.
It is so, yes, we start from the schools, right? But, you know, I always say, especially for the teachers, they have to know the culture to be able to teach some of the, you know, the knowledge of our people. So we have to educate the teachers first and foremost. I had the privilege of working with the Alberta Teacher Association. They seconded me back in 2016, and we did some resources for our teachers because Truth and Reconciliation was right at our doorstep, you know, and then the teachers have to integrate that into the school system. So that was a great experience for me. I was there for two years developing resources, but the general public is I think needs to know a lot about our Canadian history. And with ATC holding those cultural camps and it's open to everybody, I think that's very important. That's how people learn about different cultures, not only the missing murdered woman or Orange Shirt Day. Like, we have to celebrate our culture, what we know as people, what kind of, you know, what we learn as people, the goodness of people.
And of course, it benefits everyone as well. You know, when I went to school, and even while I was going through my K-12, there may be only a couple of pages in a textbook talking about Indigenous culture, the Métis, the Dene, the Stoney, the Blackfoot, everybody that was involved both on Treaty 6, 7, and 8 territory. And now that we see this movement happening of the Truth and Reconciliation and everything else that's going on, we're starting to see a differentiating shift, as you could say, that's happening across the province, as well as, you know, we're seeing more, as you said earlier, hunger for the teachings and everything else. Have you worked alongside, you know, Fort Chip and Fort McKay and also the Indigenous communities within Fort McMurray to come up with more ways to help teach and educate those that have Indigenous background, but also those that don't have Indigenous background as well?
Yeah, when I was first, there was a program, I worked for Fort McMurray First Nations back in 97. We just started, and there was a program called Bridging the Gap. We work within the schools, and it, you know, where they started off slowly, like doing Aboriginal Day. Like, they have an Aboriginal Day once in May or something like. But now it's like every month in the schools. Anyway, we have different themes. Like September would be Eagle Moon, Eagle. You know, the seven teachings, I guess. So there's a lot of integration now within the schools, and then the teachers are learning along with the students. And, you know, and we just got to keep doing this every day, you know, keep moving forward, teaching other people that don't know our culture and they live here in this beautiful country of ours.
That was Julia McDougall from Mikisew Cree First Nation. You're listening to the voices of our people on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Tremblay. Next, I continue my conversation with Siksika Nation's own Clarence Wolflag. with your time that you've served within the military, you also made the transition as well from the military of peacekeeping duties. You transitioned into the role of a police officer. Now, with that transition, were you able to take what you've learned within the military and the time that you've done in the peacekeeping duties and carry it over to the role of a police officer and teach new ways as well as to educate ways to that new role once you transitioned?
Yes, like I say, that's one thing about military life is Canadian forces may not have high-tech stuff, but they do hold their own. They got a lot of battle honors in battles. And even in the United States, some really respect the Canadian forces. It's a very honorable thing. So just to have this pride in serving under the Canadian flag, it's quite an honor. And I went on to... I said, we're going to have our own police force. So I started to look for young people that would like to take on peacekeeping within our nation. And we ended up getting our own force. I was also instrumental in helping my friend from the Blood Reserve, who was a chief of police up in Louisville, and we got that going. And then he went home to Bloods, and we put together the Blood Tribal Police Force. And eventually we got our police force. But with political interference, they shut down all the police, and all we have left is Louisville, Blood Tribe, and Chutina. But you know what? I always go to the schools. I always go to places where I go, even today. And I encourage young people. Maybe they want to go into the police force to police their community. Or that's why I sit on advisory with the city police department in Calgary and the commanding officers at elders advisory in K Division in Alberta. And I do go to Wainwright. My father and I were part of the Saskatchewan veterans when they were pulling together Bold Eagle that summer. Cadet training camp. And so those are some of the things that I carried out. I believe somebody has to encourage her. And what it taught me was discipline, having honor, respecting everybody around you, and helping wherever you can. Any little thing you do reflects on who you are as a leader. And I believe that was what the old people instilled in me. I says, you always respect, look after your people, help where you can. You don't have to get paid for it. Just go and help. And I grew up with that. And when today I'm working with RCMP recruiting, city police recruiting. Even I worked in the federal penitentiaries for about 2 years, and I also learned that that's not a bad place to be. At least you're doing something that's very useful to the community. So anyways, like I say, it's an honorable thing. You got to have courage. You got to have a way of talking with young people. And also work in addictions to help people who stray off and get frustrated and lose the skills and the education they have. And that's the other things I do. And that's why I work with Montreal University, University of Calgary, places where I encourage the students to there's nothing you can't do. Put your effort to it, make sacrifices, and in the end, you're going to have a good life. So those are the things that I learned from my military experience and my policing experience.
And also, Clarence, you know, with all of those teachings and all those, educational experiences that you pass on to the younger generations, the other importance that you've also done in your time with, you know, with what you've done and over the years is also educate the younger generations about the Blackfoot culture, the language, and what follows behind all of that, and the importance behind all of it as well to, you know, keep it revitalized to pass it on for newer generations to come. Now, for those that, you know, didn't grow up surrounded by the Blackfoot culture or the language, what would your advice be for them to get into that, to tap into that vein and say, I want to embrace the culture and help embrace the language and also be able to speak it fluently as well as to represent the Blackfoot culture to the fullest degree as it should be?
Well, you know, today I'll take the words of one spiritual elder down in the Blood Reserve. They were talking about young people don't speak the language, they're losing their culture, they're living the white man's way of life. But he stood up and said, you shouldn't worry about the young generation. These are the new people. The words he used, manitapia, these are the new people. We grew up with the old people, and we're very close to the traditional ways. So we carried them out without having too much guidance because we worked along with the old people. That was our life. But these young people are living in the reality of the white world, and they will come back soon when they know they need that in their studies or in the future to know who they are. So I said, just leave it up to them. But if they come to you, tell them the stories. Tell them the importance of at least understanding the language so they understand what we're trying to convey to them. And bring them to these ceremonies. Even going to powwows is good. As long as they enjoy the drumming, the dancing, the visiting, the good things about the powwow. So some of them start to dance, sing, and then all of a sudden they start taking interest and say, how do you say this word? Because their outfits, there's the feathers, all those things have Blackfoot names, and that's where they start. And most of them begin to understand what you're talking about, and then you say, okay, now I'm going to tell you a story in Blackfoot. And let me know if you don't understand any part of it. And it's a way of participating. And you say, I understood everything except for this one little part. There's one word I didn't quite grasp because I never heard it. Then you go back and say, okay, this is what it means. And this is how it fits into the story. So, and we're fortunate now that we have a college on the reserve. They're starting to integrate and immerse people in the language through participation. And there's even a Blackfoot 10, 20, and 30 in some of the high school classes at the college. And that's spreading out to places like Bow Valley College and Mount Royal University, University of Calgary. So it's slowly going to the communities where they're at in the urban setting. And there are a lot of organizations, and Siksika is one of them, and also Red Crow College down in Bloods. They're coming together and using their facilities to hire and so that the young people can get interested in the history of their people. And so I believe what the old man said is coming to light is that they will come back and they will don't ever think they're not interested. They want to get their education, but somewhere in their studies they have to put Aboriginal Indigenous component. So then here they come. Now they want to learn. Okay, don't turn them away just because they didn't come the first time. You got to have patience with the young generation. So anyways, all in all, yes, that's what I do today. This is why I travel. I go where I'm needed so I can, this group I'm going through, Community Futures, we have a joint group with young representatives from Treaty 7. And we're immersing them in the culture. And so they will carry it on, and we'll be advising them in ways that they need us in some of their projects or some of their things they're pulling together. So I believe when you see young people chairing meetings, developing agendas based on our traditional way, that's a really happy thing to see. So that's just a few of the things. So the young people are starting to come back, which is good. And I'm glad that I'm doing what I'm doing. I wouldn't say I retired, no. I take it easy when I can. But when I'm called upon, especially with the young people, I'm front and center. I'm ready to share what I know.
And Clarence, you've said it, you took the words right out of my mouth. You know, every time I've called you in the past, you're like, oh, I'm going over here, I'm going to Calgary, I'm going to Airdrie, I'm going to 60, wherever. And I'm like, you travel more than me. And of course, I remember my first interaction with you was down at Princess Island Park for the Orange Shirt Day round dance. And that was an amazing experience. And of course, for me, you know, that was when I started my career here with Windspeaker, and when I witnessed with my own two eyes everybody from all nations, it wasn't just Aboriginal Indigeneity, but it was also of every different culture, race, and background, hand in hand, of all different ages, surrounding the whole perimeter of Princess Island Park. When you got to witness that from the stage level or from the ground level, what was your reaction to that?
I often get mixed up with my oldest son. His name is Clarence, too. His name is Clarence. He calls me Clarence Senior. But anyways, I passed on a lot of the things that he could do in drumming and all that stuff. So it takes a little load off me. I dwell on more as traditional and the things that he can't do. So he's busy too doing stuff. He's been drumming with some noted groups. Blackfoot Confederacy and some other groups that he sang with. So anyways, I told him, just go ahead and do it. You know how to do it. Mm-hmm. That gives me a few free days that I can take it easy.
But I have to ask, though, because when I met you at the Orange Shirt Round Dance at Princess Island Park, when you saw that huge circle of the round dance of all nations and backgrounds and ages hand in hand, you know, in Princess Island Park, what was your initial reaction to seeing something like that?
Well, you know, I would say that is a great big example of what we call putting reconciliation action into motion. Years ago, the traditional people would say, all you're saying is reconciliation. But we are saying reconciliation action. You got to put it into action. So when I started to participate and get corporate sponsors to kick in, that's what makes these things a reality. In a sense, we're getting some of our share of the resources they've taken from our land when they put us on reserves and they said, we'll take over this land. And that's a good indication is that we're having a good time together, and there's even more that we can do to share this this great land that we live on. Yeah.
And, you know, for me being Métis, I have a lot of friends that, you know, are all non-Indigenous, and I always get asked the question, you know, when you go to powwow, are we allowed to go? And I always emphasize, yes, we encourage it, we welcome it with open arms, and even with it, well, not just powwows, but round dances as well. So can you let the listeners know that it's okay for anybody, doesn't have to be Indigeneity, to attend Black, you know, especially Blackfoot Round Dances, powwow, sun dances, of course, as well. Can you tell them that it's highly encouraged to go and attend these things as well?
Yeah, well, you know, there's been, because they didn't know too much about the protocol, nobody's ever really sat down and said, yes, there is a social part of our culture where we do our sacred ceremonies, our sun dances. And aside from that, even at the sun dance, some societies would go and have a grass dance. They build a round circle, and everybody dresses up, and everybody dances. just and the food is served. So over the years, this switched into what is called a powwow in a building, or now it's competition. But in the old days, when it started, there was no competition. Everybody just came. And a lot of the people brought their friends, you know, whether it be a farmer or somebody they went to school with. And it says, no, it's okay. It's just like going to a dance in the city. Come on out. You don't have to have an outfit. Just pick up on the beat and away we go. And there's even some of their friends, they said, oh, is it okay if we get an outfit? And they teach them, and pretty soon now you're seeing white people and even different other people dancing with an outfit, or the ladies are dancing with a shawl. They got moccasins. And sometimes there's more visitors dancing, and some people are sitting back and saying, well, you guys should get up and dance. You know, this is, we're having a good time. Show these people that we are very hospitable people. We treat our guests very well. And they get gifts in the giveaway, and they say, holy mackerel, I went to a dance, I never got a gift. So, and there's a song for the thank you song for the gifts, and to see a whole bunch of visitors standing there really happy that they received a gift. Oh, that, you know, that's an example of coming together the way it's supposed to be way back. But it's a one-sided thing. But we forgive them. We forgive them. Now we say we're going to go together, and that's the way it's supposed to be.
That was Clarence Wolfleg from Siksika Nation on Voices of Our People. I'd like to thank today's special guests for joining us, Julia McDougall and Clarence Wolfleg. Tune in next Thursday for more Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network.